Welcome to Are You Quizzing Me? I am Vineet Nair with my co-host Aditya Kashyap. This is a quizzing trivia podcast show. Join us as we dive deep into history, science, pop culture, and so much more. Let's get quizzing. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, for episode number 57 of Are You Quizzing Me? Your favorite quizzing and trivia podcast show. Let's get down to our regular business. But first, I have a very good piece of news to announce to all our listeners. As it is said in the Bible, ask and ye shall receive. So last episode, Aditya had, in jest and a little bit of humor and half seriously, he mentioned that he would love it if there was a subreddit for something that we had created. And lo and behold, one of our listeners, who shall hereby be known as Saint Ashwin Mascarenhas, has created said subreddit. So now you can go to Reddit. r/areyouquizzingme is our own subreddit. So thank you, Saint Ashwin. You have done what Aditya had prayed for, and for that you shall receive lots of thanks. And that's just about it. I don't think we can give anything else. As we said, this is a shoestring podcast, but you have our eternal thanks and the title of saint.
We could give Ashwin a shoestring, maybe. Ashwin, if your shoes are missing a string, let us know. We'll send you a shoestring.
Let me just also mention that Ashwin Mascarenhas is a doctor and a quizzer and a swimmer. So I think a shoestring, better giving him thanks, because giving him a shoestring might actually be an insult.
But wow, I am so flattered and honored and grateful that somebody actually did that for us. Thank you, Ashwin, so much. And you know what? I promise you this, Ashwin. Maybe in a couple of years, if Are You Quizzing Me survives, and if we ever launch our merchandise, we'll send you our first merchandise for free.
Yes.
As a token of thanks.
Yes.
Remind us in 2026 if we're still around.
Hopefully, touch wood, we'll still be around. So, Aditya, okay, Let's get to your question from last week.
So, my question from last week was, which construction or what thing has been constructed in India as a reference to a natural occurring feature of India? And here my response is Ghat Kopar, which is from Western Ghats. And you know what? This is not even a joke, because the etymology of Ghat Kopar is contested. And one of those theories is that it could generally be Ghat Ke Upar. So, you know what? This one is a freebie for our listeners. It is not the settled etymology, but I've heard that one of the possible reasons that Ghat Kopar, by the way, sorry, I should clarify, Ghat Kopar is a suburb in Mumbai. Ghat Kopar, the suburb, might be named because it was Ghat Ke Upar, or on top of a ghat in Hindi. And ghats are the mountainous region or ranges along the coasts of India. So a joke and a possible trivia rolled into one. My specialty.
I think the term that everybody's looking for is, anyway, thank you for that. thank you for that. That is a surprisingly lucid answer from Aditya, given the time of night and the question. But thank you. Now let's get down to our regularly scheduled programming. I will start off with a question today, again, sent in by one of our regular listeners, Dhrubojit Bhattacharya. It's an excellent question. It was a complete TIL for me, and so I'm hoping this will be a TIL for Aditya as well. But then you never know. This fellow has an annoying habit of knowing things he should not have any business knowing. So, the question is as follows. Behind the closed doors of the Fate Bene Fratelli Hospital in Rome was a ward filled with patients being treated for syndrome K. It was named as such to evoke Koch syndrome. Koch, let me mention, the spelling is K-O-C-H and not what your dirty mind is thinking right now. Koch syndrome is another name for tuberculosis, and syndrome K was supposed to be a new and unfamiliar disease in late 1943. It was supposed to instill fear in people who came looking for these patients, who were told that it was a deadly, disfiguring, and highly contagious illness. However, this disease did not actually consume any lives. In fact, it saved almost 20 lives. In typical Indian quizzing style, Aditya, put funda. Or for our non-Indian audience, how did it save lives?
This has to do with the Holocaust.
I am so sorry, Dhrupajit. We'll have to do better next time to stump this fellow. But yes, for our audience, can you please elaborate?
I am a bit hazy on the specifics, but I remember reading this piece of trivia, and I believe it was a hospital where some Jewish people were taking refuge, and the doctors, to make sure that the Nazis or the whatever the Nazi police, whenever they came by, were not able to get close to the patients or try to keep them away from the patients, they said that they were suffering from a very contagious disease, if I'm not wrong, and they named it Syndrome K. And the idea was that these people will survive as long as they are afraid of going close to quote-unquote patients.
Yes, it is. Annoyingly, Aditya is right, almost on every aspect. Yes, Syndrome K was a disease which was made up by the administrators and the doctors of that particular hospital. It was purported to be a neurological illness whose symptoms included convulsions, dementia, paralysis, and ultimately death. While the symptoms of the disease were deliberately kept ambiguous, the Nazis were noted to refrain from investigating the hospital or even to conduct searches for Jews on the premise out of fear of contracting the disease. Aditya, you have gotten that very quickly. And even though you did get it, it was a complete TIL for me. So, Dhrupajit Bhattacharya, thank you so much. And please, stay a good listener. And next time, send me a tougher question to pose to this fellow. Something a little more obscure that will, you know, spend that he can spend at least another 10 minutes on. But thank you for the question all the same.
Thanks, Dhrupajit. Also, Vineet, you just called him, stay a good listener.
Wait, what? Yeah.
Sounded like a teacher moment.
Yeah.
Continue listening.
Continue listening. Be no, good boy. Good boy.
Thank you, Dhrupajit. That is very kind of you. And yes, we would love more questions. Next time you could send me one and I'll ask Vineet that. But regardless of who you send it to, thank you once again. And our dear listeners, whoever else is listening, please go ahead and send a question if you find some fun trivia anywhere. And we will definitely try to include it in our upcoming episodes. Okay, so moving on to my question now. I'm speaking of a famous singer who was often criticized for only being popular due to the abundance of beautiful dancing women in his music videos. The singer responded by creating a video that featured nobody but himself. That ended up becoming his most famous music video and also is probably one of his most famous tracks. Do you know which singer I'm talking about? And this track was released in 1998.
So you said a lot of beautiful women in the video. That, honestly, even before you said the 90s, the first person that came to mind, I might be dating myself, but that came to mind was Ricky Martin.
That is a very good guess. And the reason I phrased it as I did is because I think a lot of singers have probably been accused of a similar thing, that they're
yes.
using just maybe beautiful women or scantily clad women to sort of get eyeballs onto their music videos. But in this case, we are talking about somebody else, not Ricky Martin.
Not Ricky Martin. Okay. Because I would have been very difficult. It would have been very difficult for me to remember one video of his where he appeared alone. Yeah. And he said the year was 1998. It's not Shaggy, right?
It is not Shaggy. And at this point, I'm going to give you my first hint.
Okay.
Which is, this is an Indian singer.
Ooh. This is Daler Mehndi. Tunuk, 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 tunuk.
You are absolutely right. And Tunak Tunak Tun is the song.
Yes.
Do you remember what...
yeah, he had these computer-generated backgrounds and he himself was like duplicated on three times on the screen or something. I remember the video. It was weird, to say the least.
It went viral back in the day. He responded by creating a video that featured nobody but himself. The music video was the first, or one of the first big music videos, made in India using blue screen technology, which was still kind of new back then. And this allowed the singer to superimpose his image over various computer generated backgrounds, including desert and mountain landscapes, as well as St. Basil's Cathedral for some reason. And there were multiple versions of Dilair Mehndi. So Dilair Mehndi, I did not remember this part of his career where apparently all of his music videos had dancing women in them.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that he responded with Turatun and he's like, I'm going to feature only myself in this. And it turned out to be one of his biggest hits and one of his most successful tracks of all time.
You know, so what the lesson that people should learn from that is, Dilair Mehndi was so potent that he had to dilute his appeal with so many women around him. Otherwise, every video of his would have gone like, you know, multi-platinum or whatever.
He was saving us from his completely overwhelming charisma and personality. I also need to at this point mention that I went for a concert a couple of weekends ago. And Dilair Mehndi was the closing act.
Oh,
so I saw Dilair Mehndi live on stage not that long ago. And you know what? It doesn't even matter because he's obviously much older now. So he has lost that level of energy.
Mellowed a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. But my God, the audience made up for it because he just needs to play any one of his tracks and the audience just went bonkers and it was one track after the next. And I remember dancing to Tunak Tunak Tun while standing in the audience. This is evergreen.
True, true. Very true. So let's go from Dilair Mehndi to the other side of the world. Have you heard of the island of Montserrat?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so that makes you very well read geographically. Plymouth is a town and the capital of Montserrat, which is an overseas territory of the United Kingdom, and it's located in the Leeward Island chain in the Caribbean Sea. Plymouth is unique among capitals all around the world. Can you tell me what makes it so unique?
I know there is volcanic activity that is common in this region, or there has been volcanic activity that has been prominent in this region, but I don't know if that is close to the answer. Is it something to do with it is very close to a volcano or something?
No, there are a lot of capitals and cities which are close to volcanoes.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Okay, no, give me a narrower scope then, because I'm
okay. So,
no idea where to start.
Let's say that this is with regards to population.
Again, it can't be the case that it isn't the most populated city because there are so many other
cities.
I doubt it's the fact that it's the smallest population for a capital city. Again, unlikely.
Technically not wrong, but not right either.
Interesting. Does it have zero inhabitants or zero city residents because of some quirk in there? or laws or something.
Yes. Okay, so let's put it this way. You are right on the fact that it has zero inhabitants. And you're also right because the fact that it has zero inhabitants is because of its volcanic eruptions. This is okay. The only ghost town which is the capital of a political entity. And this happened roughly around 30 years ago. So beginning in July of 1995, there were a series of huge eruptions of the Soufrière Hills volcano, which by the end of 1996 had made it extremely dangerous for people to live, and areas nearest to the volcano were immediately evacuated by 1996 April. And Plymouth now remains a ghost town while still being the de jure capital of the island of Montserrat. So Aditya continues his annoying habit of answering my questions very easily and very quickly, while I bravely soldier and struggle on for 10 to 15 minutes at a time for a question's answer. You can see why, audience, you should be sending me the questions and not him. So please continue to send questions to me.
I like how this is one thing that we keep fighting over. Who should receive the questions from audience? In case the audience members haven't clued into it. It makes our job slightly easier in that 1 week where we have some questions from an audience.
Yeah, and especially people but like Arjun send me 3-4 questions at a time. My job is done for that week.
And boy, are those great questions each and every single time. So, yeah. Either way, whoever you send it to, you're doing us a favor. And the reason, by the way, I know Plymouth and this particular piece of trivia is because it was part of a play script that I wrote once.
Wait, what?
A while back. And yeah, I have written and staged a few.
No, no, that is not time. Surprising to me. I was wondering as to what plot did you have that included a volcano in Montserrat in the Caribbean Sea? That is what I'm interested in.
It was a love story. It was a regular love story about two characters who are living in the United States of America, and they're just taking a trip somewhere nearby. So they decide to fly to Plymouth because it is one of those underrated places to visit. And I have not been there, but this was what my research showed up. So I did and then I just went into a rabbit hole. There was no need to go into the rabbit hole. All I needed was the name of a place, and then I got very interested in Plymouth and Montserrat.
So what was the play called? Let me guess. Love in the Time of Volcanoes.
No, it was not called that. I actually never named it, but that is a great name. I'll take that into consideration.
Yes. Or you can call it Vesuvius version
2.0. Yeah, true. That's not a bad name either.
Yeah, don't be polite. That was a really bad name.
I mean, I was going to make a pun. I was going to talk about I am in lava with you.
And, oh, that's so much better. See, this is why he does stand up and improv, and I sit in a lab behind a microscope.
We all have our uses to society. You are clearly more useful. Okay. Let's move on to my question.
Okay.
So since I did mention America, this has to do with an American person. A bank robber by the name of Willie Sutton was apparently once asked by a reporter as to why he robbed banks. And Willie Sutton replied by saying, because that's where the money is. Do you know what legacy this particular response has left in a bunch of fields? And not necessarily, and in fact, not even in the field of crime, but in computer programming, in medicine, a lot of these spaces. What legacy did this particular response leave?
I have heard this thing about Willie Sutton. I mean, like, at least the line that's where the money is. But what legacy did it leave? Wow. Is it got to do with a computer error code or something?
No, it's a lot broader than that.
A lot broader than that. Okay. You said it's not to do with crime. So then I'm guessing it's not anything to do with corporate security or security measures or security alarms or anything of that sort.
No.
You said medicine as well, huh?
Okay, yes, I did. And I'll tell you something slightly more specific. It is to do with any process which requires diagnosis. So when I said computer programming, it has, like, when you have to debug a computer program, diagnosis in a medical sense as well.
Wait, is this the modern version of Occam's razor?
You want to clarify that a little bit more?
Okay, so Occam's razor says that the solution which takes the least number of assumptions is usually the right one. I'm oversimplifying the thing, but...
Okay, so I'll give this to you. You are very close, and my next clue was going to perhaps get you very close to it. I'll give you the clue, in fact, because it's a really fun clue.
Okay.
Theodore Woodward was a professor at the University of Maryland in the US, and he instructed his medical interns with this one particular line: when you hear hoofbeats,
think horses, not zebras.
Don't expect to see a zebra. Exactly. Think horses, not zebra. Which is what leads to the term zebra in medicine, which is the American medical slang for a surprising, often exotic medical diagnosis when a more commonplace explanation is more likely.
Yeah.
So if somebody says something as a possible cause for a disease which is super exotic.
Yeah.
As opposed to maybe something as commonplace as like a common cold, I don't know, then that would be a zebra. I'm sure Vineeth, you can perhaps explain this better. Occam's razor is very close as well. Occam's razor, let me just also expound on that briefly, is the problem-solving principle that recommends searching for explanations constructed with the smallest possible set of elements. So that talks about how many assumptions you have to make. The zebra, or the answer to the question, which is Sutton's Law. So Willie Sutton was the name of the bank robber. It's called the Sutton's Law, which states that when diagnosing, one should first consider the obvious. That is, very simply put, Sutton's Law.
Okay.
And also the zebra in American medical slang. So that's why I asked you this specifically, because I was going to bring up the zebra thing, and I'm pretty sure you would have cracked it, which you already knew. So I was correct in that way. Have you watched the TV show House?
Yes, it's every episode is a zebra, basically. And not even a zebra. It's every episode of House is like a genetically cloned and enhanced zebra in the wild.
In House, on their wiki, the wiki for House that has been made, you can see for every episode, it says something called zebra factor. And it rates you from a scale of 1 to 10 on basically how exotic and unlikely this particular diagnosis that House MD came up with was. So there are some episodes which have a 10 zebra factor because it is just basically impossible. I remember one of the episodes that got that was smallpox.
Yeah.
Was one of the diagnoses that they came up with. And the idea was that, oh, smallpox is eradicated, obviously, in the wild. But this particular person, while diving into the sea, broke a bottle which had been sealed with a ship that had went down like 300 years ago. So there was some smallpox virus still alive in it or something like that. And that's how this particular person might have contracted smallpox. That's the fun little piece of trivia that is associated with medicine, with computer programming, and with the TV show House. Sutton's Law or Zebra.
Nice. Also, the thing with House is there are certain episodes where it looks like a zebra to a Western population or a US-trained doctor, but it's a horse to an Indian doctor.
Mm.
Because there are certain conditions which they just do not come to their mind first because they hardly ever see it, but we see on a regular basis.
Okay.
I think there was one episode there was tuberculosis, which... again, I haven't seen House in almost a decade, but I remember there was an episode something where the answer was tuberculosis, and that's like a differential diagnosis that almost every Indian doctor keeps in the back of their mind, because tuberculosis can affect practically every part of your body. Something that we are all taught of in third year MBBS. There are a couple of them. Obviously, most of the 99.99% of things you see in House, you would be lucky to see once or twice in your career. And that's if you practice in a place where you see thousands of patients. But otherwise, I mean, most of the things are just chapters in medical textbooks. So, zebras.
I don't mean to be an ass about this, Vineet, because I'm not the medical professional you are.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure third year of MBBS, you learn Jadu Ki Jhappi and not pre-eclampsia. So I don't know, maybe you've forgotten your medical training, but I hate to correct you on this, but that's what you learn in third year MBBS.
You know, I hate Raju Hirani for that movie. Like, it's an entertaining movie, but the way it misrepresents the medical profession is just criminal.
Yeah, don't all of you just wait for people to fill out forms before you save their lives?
Yeah, definitely. Like, the patient will be coming in with a stab wound or they'll be bleeding on the floor and we'll be like, no, you have to get it. You have to get it. Otherwise, we won't touch you. Yeah, that's exactly how things work.
Ooh, in case you did not pick up on that, that was Vineet Nair's sarcasm.
Yes.
He is very offended. Okay. I would also like to add that is Vineet's view entirely. Raju Hirani, if you're listening to this podcast, please cast me in your next movie. I love your movies.
Really? Even Donkey?
Vineet, I'm an actor. Please don't shit on my work. Okay?
Okay. Honestly, Donkey's release on Netflix was the quietest Shah Rukh release in the history of mankind. I don't think anybody even knew that it was out on Netflix until we just opened up and suddenly, wait, Donkey's back on Netflix?
I don't know, Vineet. We are very popular as a podcast. Please don't make these controversial opinions. We have a subreddit now.
Yeah, theek. I'm going to keep quiet. Raju Hirani, you're great. Donkey is a beautiful movie.
So convincing. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so let me move on to my question, a little closer to home. There were widespread protests against this 2023 film in Nepal due to a single line of dialogue. Even though the Nepal censor board cleared the film for release after cutting the line, the film was banned, fearing the breakout of a law and order situation. This was eventually overturned by the courts and the film was allowed to release. Which film was this? And what was the reason for all this hullabaloo?
Sorry, which year did you mention?
2023, last year.
In Nepal?
In Nepal, yes.
No idea. I need a little bit more of a hint.
It was a big movie. That's my hint.
2023. Brahmastra was not 2023, right?
Wait, my internal clock is all screwed up. But Brahmastra released in 2023.
Well, oh, then is it Brahmastra?
No, it's not Brahmastra.
Oh, you misleading person, you.
But wait, okay. First question. Again, this is a question I must ask. Why are you assuming it's an Indian movie?
Oh, I just assumed there might have been something controversial in terms of, I don't know, religious sentiments being hurt and stuff like that. Indian movie felt like a decent guess. But now I assume it's not an Indian movie, unless you're just saying this to throw me off the scent.
Who knows?
Who knows? You know.
Who knows what lies in the hearts of men?
Okay. All right, then I'll ask for a clue. Is it an Indian movie?
Yes, it is an Indian movie.
What a wasted name. Okay, are we talking a Hindi film? Is it a Bollywood film?
Yes. No, technically, I think it'll be called a pan-Indian film because it released in multiple languages.
Did it have anything to do with maps and misrepresentation of the land borders or something along those lines?
No, I don't think we have that problem with Nepal.
Yeah, we don't.
And the last Indian movie to feature a map, I think, was Naksha, which I was hoping would be some Indiana Jones-esque thing, but turned out to be, let's say, a steaming pile of excrement. Now, don't tell me, don't say that, because the director of Naksha will not give you a job.
Director of Naksha, whoever you are, please know that this is beneath supplement. Please cast me in your next movie also. Unless I'm working on Raju Hirani's film, in which case. Okay. So it doesn't have anything to do with borders.
No.
Are we talking then religious sentiments being hurt somehow?
Yes.
Okay, because I remember there was some news about this. I didn't remember this in the context of a film. There was something about the Ramayana and where was the kingdom of, I believe, Sita's father and all of those things. Does it have anything to do with that?
Okay, if that were true, which would this film be?
Oh, what film dealt with the Ramayana? I have no clue. Which Hindi film dealt with the Ramayana?
Oh my God! Okay, let me just give you a clue. This was also... Okay, I don't want to say anything that will cause me trouble later. But this movie was not ideal in its representation of the Ramayana due to a lot of tapri dialogues and whatnot.
Oh, I remember this. Yes, there was some modern reimagining or something like that. Oh, God, I do. It's right at the edge. I can't.
Prabhas.
Grasp at it.
Kriti Sanon. Excellent logo. Horrible movie.
Excellent logo.
At least the pre-release logo was great. But
was
then...
Liger?
No!
No, wait, Liger is something else. Sorry. Who was it, Liger? I don't even remember.
The Liger was that Arjun Reddy fellow. What's his name? Now, I've forgotten names.
Vijay Devakonda.
Vijay Devakonda, yeah. Vijay Devakonda.
Prabhas. What is
Prabhas, Kriti Sanon. Saif Ali Khan. No,
sorry, put me out of my misery, man. I've forgotten it entirely.
Okay, you are lucky because a lot of us want to scrub it out of our brains and we are not able to. The movie is Adipurush.
Adipurush, that is the one. Yes.
So in the movie, Sita is described as the daughter of India. However, the Nepalese believe that Sita, also known as Janaki, was from Janakpur in Nepal.
Right, yeah, that was the context.
You were right. You got the answer right. But then, no, I love to torture you. So.
Cool. All right. That was a fun question and a good reminder of something that happened last year. And that brings me to my question, because I want to ask you something about films as well.
Okay.
Now, because you are a movie buff, I would imagine you would know this trivia, but maybe you don't. This particular individual, and I'll tell you the name as well, but for now, this person, he was driving with a bunch of friends and was in the southern part of Italy. He was driving into Rome and he was on a particular highway And he remembered looking at the name of the highway and thinking, wow, this would be a great name. What did he end up naming? Okay. This has to do with the world of Hollywood.
When he started with driving and Italy, my mind had gone to Roman Holiday, Gregory Peck, but I'm guessing it's nothing to do with that because you said it is named after something which was a highway in Italy.
Okay, so much more recent than Roman Holiday. I'll tell you, whatever was named in 2012. And I'll give you the person as well. His name is Daniel Katz. Daniel Katz. Katz. K-A-T-Z.
Daniel Katz. What did Daniel Katz name? 2012.
Okay, so Daniel Katz, David Fenkel, and John Hodges founded a company in 2012. And they named it after this particular Italian highway. What company am I talking about?
Finkel. The name sounds very familiar. Is it like a special effects company? Is it like one of those CGI special effects companies?
No. It's an independent entertainment company.
Oh, I know this. Oh, God. I should have gotten this earlier. It's A24. It's A24.
It is A24. It is A24. You are absolutely right. My next clue was going to be that they completely owned the last Oscars.
No, at the moment. Because I should have gotten that because I remember thinking that A24 could be a highway in the UK because the UK has the M1 and the M2 and whatnot. So then I kept thinking that, you know, the A24 could be a highway in the UK. And until I heard that last clue, it just did not click.
Well, you got it very quickly. So I'll still give you props for that. A24, for anybody who might not know, is a film distribution and production company based in film and television, based in the US. They have made some fantastic films in the last couple of years. It's very new, but they've made some very good films the last couple of years, some very bad films as well. But last year at the Oscars, Everything Everywhere All at Once dominated the Oscars, and it was distributed by A24. So A24 has kind of developed this identity of being a distribution company that backs some really wild and really quirky projects, which are sometimes extremely successful, both critically and financially.
I think Moonlight was also distributed by A24, right? Moonlight.
Moonlight was by them. Room was by them. Ex Machina was by them.
No, yes. Yeah. But Ex Machina, I think they only distributed. Ex Machina was already a project which was ready, but yeah.
Yes, you're right. They have distributed these films, but done really well. They, in terms of TV shows or rather web series, they made Beef, which came out on Netflix and also won quite a few awards. So yeah, they have had some very famous names associated with them, which is the Daniels, Darren Aronofsky. So some of Darren Aronofsky's films have been through A24. Ari Aster. A lot of Ari Aster's films have been through A24. Robert Eggers. Some really up-and-coming names in film. In Hollywood have been associated with A24. So they have developed quite the reputation and deservedly so, if I may say so myself.
Yeah, because a lot of people now, the moment they hear it's kind of become this thing where if it's an A24 movie, it has to be good. And one thing I like about them, their logo is different in every movie. So if you take something like Miramax or New Line Cinemas or Paramount or whichever it be, these big production houses or distribution houses, they always have the same logo that comes, you know, every time, exactly the same. So most of the time you remember that logo and you associate that with that particular house. But A24, the only thing that remains constant is the fact that it spells out A24. Every movie, depending upon the aesthetic of the movie, depending upon what subject matter it has, the logo, the formation of the logo and the style of the logo changes. So they don't have like one particular logo that they use. Obviously, they have a corporate logo, but in the movies, if you check out, every A24 movie has a different style for the logo.
It's pretty cool, yeah. They have a penchant for really supporting the director's vision wholeheartedly. So,
okay, so my question is regarding war. What is it good for? So, this war, as an X war, X being the name that's given to this war, took place in 1987 in northern Chad on the Chad-Libya border. It was the last phase of the Chadian-Libyan conflict, and it takes its name from something used by the Chadian troops for mobility as they fought against the Libyans. The war resulted in a heavy defeat for Libya, which according to American sources lost 1/10 of its army, with 7,500 men killed and $1.5 billion worth of military equipment destroyed or captured. On the other side, Chadian forces suffered only 1,000 deaths. What is the name that's given to this particular war?
Ooh, I do not have much knowledge of war between Chad and Libya. There's a specific name that was given to this war.
Yes.
No idea at all.
Okay, first clue, which is quite obscure, is that this name started off initially as a family name. Like, it's still the name of a family, but it's now famous for some other reasons.
A family which is known for being from Chad or Libya?
No. Nowhere even close.
So, no other African nation either?
No.
Okay, because I was going to guess De Beers or something.
No, no.
All right.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if they ever sponsored a conflict.
I'm pretty sure they would have. I'm just going to say this on the board on the limb and say it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. One bit. Is it an American family?
No.
Oh, wow, interesting. What other global players? Then I'd have to ask, is it an Indian family?
No.
Interesting. So that clue doesn't really help me. Give me some other clue if you can.
Okay, so the clue, again, I'm the part of the question. I'll repeat part of the question. The name of the war takes its name from something used by Chadian troops for mobility as they fought against the Libyans.
Mobility. So is it like some sort of a tank or something?
No.
Tank or like an armored vehicle or something like that?
No. Follow that thought through to its conclusion. To its logical conclusion.
Tank, armored vehicle. The next thing I was going to suggest was helicopters.
No. Colder.
Or planes.
Much colder.
Okay.
But you're on the right line of thought.
I'm going to embarrass myself. I'm not even sure if Chad has a coast. So I'm not sure if Chad would have a navy.
No, nothing. Cold, so cold, very cold. Ice cold.
Okay, so not navy either. Oh, wait, not tank, not armored vehicle, nothing in the air, nothing on sea. Mobility, what, shoes? What else gives mobility?
Yes, you're right. It is the Adidas is family.
Adidas, yeah, I was going to say the Dassler family. Wow, no, I have no clue.
You are, again, still in the right line of thought. So my question would be, if it is not tanks, and if it's not an armored vehicle or an APC or armored personnel carrier, what else?
I don't know what other vehicles are used in war.
Okay, my next clue to you would be to think of a terrorist-related fact that I had given you, and you refused to believe it at first. You thought I was joking.
Terrorist-related fact. Is it the fact that ISIS has a specific kind of car?
Yes. So which car are we talking about?
I want to say Land Cruiser.
So the company name or the family name would be?
Is it Toyota?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's called the Toyota War.
Wow.
I'm not even kidding.
I mean, I should laugh at you.
I'm not even kidding. It's called the Toyota War, also known as the Great Toyota War. Or in Arabic, it's known as Harb al-Toyota. In French, it's called Guerre de Toyota. So it takes its name from the Toyota pickup trucks, primarily the Toyota Hilux and the Toyota Land Cruiser, which were used to provide mobility for the Chadian troops as they fought against the Libyans. And these were provided by the French to the Chadian rebels.
I'm pretty sure that does not make for good PR for Toyota, but...
No, but that's the thing. I mean, like, you had Libya with tanks and things like that, and then you had these people with Toyotas and basically anti-aircraft and other things just put on the flatbed of the Hilux and whatnot, and then they managed to inflict $1.5 billion worth of damage to the Libyans and 7,500 casualties while only suffering 1,000 casualties. I don't think there's a better commercial for this.
The world isn't as dark as you think it is, Vineet. I don't think they're going to put out the fact that they're really good war vehicles as a advertisement campaign and everybody else will lap it up happily. Because I think that just might affect the brand image. But hey, I get your point. I get your point that if I was ever in a war, I would choose a Toyota.
Yes, a Toyota Hilux.
That would be my
indestructible.
I really hope I never have to reach that point. But if I ever do, Vineet, I will keep your words fresh in my memory.
Yeah. The preferred vehicle of terrorists and rebels everywhere. The Toyota Hilux.
Okay. I'm going to ask something related to cars as well, since you did bring up the Toyota.
Okay.
Which car brand often has the number 23 printed on its race cars?
Ford.
No.
Ferrari. You know where I'm going with this, right? I'm just going to name every car manufacturer I know. The next one's going to be Lotus.
Somehow you started with Ford. Like F. Not even like Audi that you could go alphabetically. You just started with F. Ford and Ferrari.
No, the first car I can remember, like I have this, the picture of that, the Ford GT at the Le Mans race in the 60s. So where they won three in a row. Like I have that kind of image of the three Fords crossing the finish line. And I remember the numbers on the side, so that's why it's in my. So that's why Ford came out first. Okay, any number 23. Any particular. Okay, you're obviously, you're not going to tell me what the significance of that number is because that would probably give away the answer.
You are right, yeah. Quite literally give away the answer.
Quite literally give away the answer. Wait, quite literally give away the answer. Now I'm stuck on that.
I would suggest moving past that and it'll make sense later. But
okay, not immediately.
I doubt you're going to reach. Yeah, I doubt you're going to reach the answer of why that.
Is this is a Grand Prix or a like a racing car version?
They have had touring cars. They have had endurance races or a GT. So they have had multiple types of races.
But not F1.
No, they have not been in F1.
That eliminates a lot. So that throws out Ferrari. It throws out Lotus, Porsche, a lot of people. Who's left? 23.
If you are a racing enthusiast, they might know that they won the 24 Hours Daytona in 1992. They dominated the 1999 British Touring Car Championship. And all of these cars, by the way, had the 23 number on it.
My racing thing is limited to what I watch in Top Gear. That's it. The old Top Gear, by the way, I do not approve of the new Top Gear. As far as I'm concerned.
Once again, director of the new Top Gear. I'm available to feature on your show. Not take Vineet's opinion as being representative of mine as well. Thank you.
Where is Jeremy Clarkson when you need him? Nope, dude. I need okay. Something else here.
This will probably be a clue that will give away the answer. But let me help you out anyways. And this is basically, let's go back to the previous question and the previous car brand, and where are they from?
They're from Japan. So this is what, Honda?
No.
Mitsubishi?
No.
Toyota?
It's not Toyota, obviously.
Okay, so it's not Toyota, it's not Honda, it's not Mitsubishi. Japanese car manufacturers, Hyundai is South Korean, so is Kia. Daewoo is also South Korean. Whoa. Am I missing somebody big? I must be missing somebody big.
It is a well-known car brand, yeah.
Are you going to be technical and say Lexus, but Lexus is owned by Toyota?
No. It is a car brand which is entirely Japanese and not like a subsidiary or anything.
I am blanking like anything right now.
Sixth largest automaker in the world after Toyota, Volkswagen Group, Hyundai,
oh God.
General Motors and Ford.
I'm having my Adipurush moment. Oh. Sixth largest.
To be fair, this list is also from 2017, so that list might have changed slightly, but definitely a very well-known brand.
Oh God. Are cars manufactured by this particular manufacturer available in India? Last clue.
Yes, they are.
Okay, my apologies in advance to the many, many listeners who are right now cursing me and screaming at your listening devices or your car radio or stereo, whatever. But I am absolutely blanking right now. My mind is fixated on Toyota and Honda.
One last clue, Vineet.
Okay.
So let's go back to the clue that actually was the first clue.
Okay.
And I said quite literally give the name away. And the reason I said is because 23 or 23 in Japanese would be the name of this company.
2-3 in Japanese.
What numbers in
Japanese? Yeah. 2-3 in Japanese is the name of this car manufacturer. God.
Now, even people who do not follow cars, but maybe follow anime or manga are cursing.
Again, I do not follow manga. I follow translated versions of manga. I don't listen to the original one. And that too, anime, very few.
Translated versions of anime.
Yeah.
And not listen to the original ones. So, are you a person who does dubs over subs? Because that is...
No, I do. I do subs for movies, but not for anime. Okay. Because the animation itself is distracting in itself.
All right. Okay. At this point, I guess I have to give you the answer.
You'll have to give me the answer and just wait for me to commit seppuku or harakiri right now.
Number one in Japanese is ichi. Number two in Japanese is ni. And number three in Japanese is
God, Nissan. Nissan. Yes. I must now, in the name of honor, commit seppuku. Oh, God.
Yeah.
I am sorry, dear audience, especially those listening who are right now just furious that it took me this long. But in my defense, it is 1:35 in the morning. And hey, Aditya had Adipurush as well. So there's nothing to go.
And Adipurush and Aditya share like letters in common. Nissan and you only share like one letter in common, like Nair.
Oh, God. Yeah. But yeah, okay, so Nissan 23. Okay, 23. They have a racing division. I'm not a big follower of racing. As I mentioned, mine is limited to Top Gear, but I did not know that Nissan cars... I mean, like, yeah, Nissan cars are modified quite a bit. They in the mod car market, they are modified quite a bit. So I'm guessing I should have guessed that.
Well, you now know something new.
Yes.
Nissan. And you can remember Japanese numbers also now.
Yeah, Nissan. I just heard this other piece of trivia recently. I'm not planning to put in a question, so I might as well say. When you go to Japanese airports, you might know this, you've visited Japan. When you go to Japanese airports, there is an instruction, a three-word thing that comes in English. And there's a Japanese translation, that's a Japanese version of the same thing. But they're both different. The meanings of both are different.
Oh, okay.
It's the same thing intended for all the people exiting and exiting the plane and entering Japan, right? Three words in English, and I think maybe like one word in Japanese, but the meaning is completely different. It's not like a proper translation. So if you're Japanese and you read it, you'll get one meaning, and if you're English and you read the English version, you'll get another meaning.
Like, do you mean like literally both of them mean something differently?
Yes, literally mean something differently.
But metaphorically are the same thing. Something like
the
that.
Purpose is the same, but the meaning is different.
Welcome to Japan or...
Yes, so that's exactly what the English version reads. Welcome to Japan.
Okay.
Do you know what the Japanese version reads? I don't remember the Japanese word, but the Japanese version translates to welcome back.
Oh, okay. That's smart. That's nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. Oh, that is so... lovely, because I feel like every country could do that.
Yeah.
In their local language, just write welcome back. And in any other language, say welcome to wherever they're coming to.
Yeah.
Nice. Very nice.
Very nice. So I think that's all the time we have for our regular questions today. Aditya, what's your question for next week?
Somebody suggested that we can ask questions not about India in this particular segment.
You know who you are.
So what is it that American airports should write when people come into the country?
Okay.
As a welcome to America message, but not quite that.
Okay, nice. Aditya, what's your pop culture recommendation for this week?
Okay, so I have, as I usually do during Oscar season, gone on a Oscar binge. I'm quite the film snob, the insufferable friend of the group who will tell you that he has watched all the fancy films.
Yes.
So I have recently started watching all of those available in India in the theaters. And I must say The Holdovers turned out to be quite the delight to watch. So Paul Giamatti, as always, a very reliable, very lovely, wonderful actor to watch. And he does a great job in this movie as well. So check out The Holdovers. I also had the chance to watch Monster. Phenomenal film. It really takes its time to get going, or rather to make sense, but once it does, it It's just beautiful. So I would suggest checking out Monster. And yeah, those are the two film recommendations for this week.
My recommendation is a podcast, which frankly does not need any recommendation because it's already quite insanely popular and many of you may already have heard it. But I like the fact that they release an episode maybe once every 1 to 2 months, but still are insanely popular. So there is this podcast, WTF is with Nikhil Kamath. The podcast is WTF is with Nikhil Kamath. Nikhil Kamath, obviously, one of the bigger entrepreneurs in India. And it's only around 15 episodes so far, but he takes his time with each episode. It's like a more civilized version of, or let's say less right-wing version of a Joe Rogan kind of podcast, where he has multiple guests and they deep dive into one particular topic. And it's usually related to something related to entrepreneurship or something like that. So they have episodes like WTF goes into building a fashion beauty or home brand, or WTF is the restaurant game, WTF does it take to build influence today. And for all the listeners, yes, I know what WTF stands for. I'm just not mentioning that because if we do, then we'll have to put up a notification on Spotify saying that there's explicit word usage here.
What do you mean, Vineet? Everybody knows WTF is Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yes. Yeah. Moving on. So just catch that podcast. It's already quite popular. It's on Spotify and most of the platforms. They do a great deep dive and it's very well interviewed. It's an overall great podcast. It's an alternative to Joe Rogan, but where you'll actually learn something useful. So that's all for this episode. Thank you for listening in. We hope you enjoyed the show and learned something new. If you liked what you heard, please consider subscribing to our podcast and leaving us a review on your favorite podcast platform. It would help us a lot if you can just spend 2 seconds to subscribe, to follow, and hit that notification icon on whichever podcast platform you're following us on. We would also love to hear from you. Feedback, suggestions, trivia. You can send us questions at our email at areyouquizzingme@gmail.com. You just have to put the name of the quizmaster in the subject line who you want to ask the question. You can also reach us on Instagram at areyouquizzingme and on our brand new subreddit r/areyouquizzingme on reddit.com. We appreciate your support and look forward to sharing more episodes with you in the future. Thanks again for tuning in. Have a great day.
See you guys next week.